Hey, Harpy Hour fans. There's a new way to earn yourselves a coveted Harpy Hour logo sticker and get a shout out from us in an episode.
Just tag us at Harpy Hour Pod on an original social media post. So not a retweet, but something you wrote yourself telling your friends how much you love us.
Next, DM us your mailing address straight from your social media account or email us along with a screenshot of your post to harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com.
You won't get another sticker if you already got one in our last giveaway, but let your friends know anyways so they can participate and get a matching sticker.
We're only giving away up to 20 stickers, but if you miss out, you can also get one by supporting us on Patreon.
Now, before you enjoy the episode, check out this promo from another awesome podcast to add to your list and stick around for Harpy Hour.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Harpy Hour may contain explicit language, as well as graphic, violent, and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Harpy Hour,
the harpiest of all the hours.
Oh, what just happened? Am I Steph now?
You wish.
Oh, do I? Guys, I can't see out my eye. I'm blind. I have no depth perception.
I can't hike anymore.
I have no depth perception. Guys, it's so cold. It only made it to 74 today.
Okay, we say that, but like on the 5-minute break, I went and got a sweatshirt.
God damn it, Steph.
I'm now wearing a sweatshirt and shorts, and it is 79. It's 79 today. In my apartment, it's like 72.
Yeah, I would wear a sweatshirt then too.
I'm under a blanket, so maybe I can't talk. But I also have no pants on. So.
You're also in Colorado.
Yeah, that's true. There's like legit snow outside.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that in a long time, and I don't miss it.
Oh my God, you guys, I didn't tell you about my harrowing journey from the airport. But first, I'm Tracy.
I'm Liz.
I'm Steph.
So I came back from the airport and I was coming back from my bachelorette in Florida and I forgot to bring real shoes.
Did you wear to the airport?
What did you wear to the airport?
Yeah.
Well, it was 70 when I went to the airport. It was like this unseasonably warm day. And so I'm like, oh, well, this is great. I'll just wear, you know, flip-flops forever. This is great.
Welcome to my life.
I cannot wear flip-flops to an airport. Like, everything's cold everywhere.
No. So I land in Colorado. And first of all, our flight was delayed 2 hours because there was the fourth largest snowstorm in Denver history. And fortunately, I was in Florida for like 90% of it. But we were delayed 2 hours because the Denver airport was closed until 2 p.m. local time to like clear off the runways and, you know, whatever. So we landed at 2:11 local time and we get out and we're going to the car. And I realized that I did not pack additional shoes. I'm in fucking flip-flops.
Oh.
God damn it, you guys. Oh. So I'm like, all right, so we have a covered parking spot. This should be fine. We are waiting for like the bus to take us to the covered parking spot. And we get to the covered parking spot and I realize that the wind had blown these snowdrifts into the covered parking. And our car because I had driven Kim and I there in my little, in Olaf,
in
the
Olaf.
Little, mm-hmm. the little Mazda 3 who likes warm hugs. And he is coated in snow, like drifts up to my waist. Like I am wading through it in my flip flops.
Oh,
I thought
God.
That Craig was dropping you off and picking you up. I just made that assumption based on nothing. So
me
I was
too.
Thinking,
so I was like, Kevin, bring shoes.
Yeah.
Our flights were during the workday on
Craig
Thursday.
Works.
I know, right?
He works from home.
Yeah. Because I was thinking, how long was he parked that the to pick you
oh,
up that the
oh.
car got covered?
No, it was over the weekend. It was from Thursday to Monday. And it was the most miserable experience. I was soaked. I looked like a little wet rat. I like we had to sit in the, we had to take breaks to like sit in the car and warm up and then keep like dusting
shoveling?
Off the car. Yeah, it was
oh
bizarre. And like
my God, this sounds horrible. This is my nightmare.
Yeah, it was not good, you guys. And I had
flip-flops.
To leave my car. So poor little Olaf was not going to make it to the house because our like subdivision was not plowed like at all. So Craig had to rescue me in his like bigger SUV kind of car and come get me at the grocery store like right outside of our subdivision. And bring me and all my shit back.
Did he bring you socks or shoes?
No, he did bring me a blanket and he brought me a glass of wine and he had a bubble bath going. So props
aww.
To Craig. It was very nice. Yeah. It was very good. He said, and he said, quote, I learned this from husbands of TikTok. Craig is really into TikTok now, you guys.
Guys, my dad's on TikTok.
Stop it.
Oh my God.
I refuse to believe that.
And he found this TikToker that he really enjoys. It's like, I don't know if this person is like a nurse or a doctor or some medical professional who works in the ER. So he like, I guess this guy started making these short little videos to explain medical things to people, but like in a funny way. And he doesn't like curses a lot. And he's got some like okay. humor built into it. So he's like, oh my God, this guy's great. You got to watch this. And he like sends me these videos of like things to me in the medical field that are like very basic things. And he's like,
yeah.
oh, look how he explains this. He's so funny. I'm like, I just don't get
thanks.
It. But he just like went on and on and on about it the last time I was on the phone with him. And he sent me like two or three of these videos. Just
amazing.
Really into it.
Amazing.
Like, oh my God, my dad's on TikTok.
Craig has, he like saves videos for me. And like, it's our new routine. That now I make coffee, like I get the coffee going mm-hmm. and then he shows me the things he saved since the previous morning.
Nice.
And it's beautiful. It's our little morning routine. TikTok and coffee.
Well, it's like me with Rona the Puff.
Yes.
Eric is not on Instagram, but he loves Rona the Puff. So periodically I have to give him updates on what Rona's up to.
I'm obsessed with that.
Guys, I went snorkeling this morning and I saw a real live Rona
aww.
In the wild and she was huge.
Aww.
She was like, I don't know.
Like a
like
softball, a basketball?
Oh. Like a foot long. It's a huge fish.
Rona the foot long.
$5 Rona.
I don't know why that was so funny, but I just farted a little.
She's not wearing pants.
Yeah, did you see the video where like one of those daytime talk show hosts accidentally burped and farted at the same time in the middle of talking?
No. Not even that funny.
It was like Wendy Williams or something like that. Wendy
yes,
something is her name.
Wendy Williams.
She was like in the middle of saying something and then she burped and farted.
Wendy Williams
she was
burp.
Saying.
Fart.
And both of them were caught on camera.
A brief the first hit is a brief history of Wendy Williams burping and farting on TV. This is apparently habitual.
I don't watch her, but I watched the Colbert. Almost said the Colbert Report. Late Show with Colbert,
show with
and
Colbert.
He was talking about it. He was like defending her.
Oh my God!
It was. Oh, I was laughing pretty hard for that.
Okay,
one.
Here's the video. I'll watch it after we record.
Okay.
I'm bookmarking that shit.
Oh God, it hurts. I'm laughing so hard.
Liz, whatever you have to talk about today is not as good as Wendy Williams burp farting.
Yeah, instead we're just going to talk about that. We're just going to talk about burp farting.
It's a really high bar. We've set a really high bar.
This would be setting me up for success.
All right, Liz.
Yes.
You better burp and fart when you tell us what it is.
I will not be doing that.
What you harping on, girl?
What you burping and farting on, girl?
Tell us.
But there's so many of them.
Burps and farts.
I'm sorry, is this not your speed? Hamilton, sir, have Lafayette take the lead. Yes,
oh
sir!
Oh my God, this shit again.
You did this.
Stop. You did
this. That was exactly what she wanted to happen.
Every fucking episode.
That was choreographed.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
I can't help it when I'm teed up like that. Like, Jesus.
Liz, that was your fault that time.
I know. I,
she knows.
Yeah.
Wait. I want to take a guess. So it's something that there's a lot of.
Fish in the sea.
Are we talking about Rona the Foot Long? Never. How many Rona the Foot Longs there are?
My segment is not in the 1800s. I know. It's wild.
Boo.
We've moved on.
I'm sorry.
It's
we
not
only...
burp farting either.
God damn it. There's so many things this is not.
So we moved on to the 1900s and we are in Australia. So following the First World War, the Australian government needed to find work for their returning veterans. So it's pretty admirable that they didn't want their veterans to just like come home and go back to whatever was going on before their lives. Like they wanted to set them up for success and be able to like give them employment now that they're not engaged in like war activities anymore.
Question is, yes. Is what they have so many of shrimps on the Barbie?
No.
Oh.
Kangaroos.
No.
Oh, I know what it is.
Yep. Shush.
Unintelligible slang. Unintelligible.
I know what
slang.
It is. I remember seeing it on your list because I was going to do it once.
Yeah. Oh, I you still don't know what it is. I still don't know what it is. So keep going.
So they started a soldier settlement scheme, which is to give all of their veterans plots of land for farming.
Huge tracts of land. Lol. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
And so they would farm primarily wheat and sheep. And so this had multiple benefits.
No ore or brick.
I was going to make a Catan. I was going to make a Catan reference, but I was waiting. I was letting you have it.
How many bricks can I give you for one of those sheep? I just really need a sheep right
sheep,
now.
Motherfucker. Bah, sheep, goddamn. Because of my sheep empire.
Your illegal sheep empire.
Whenever
that I heard
of. Everyone just watched it happen, and it was my first game, and they didn't tell me. So whatever, they allowed you enabled me. You enabled me. I will die on this hill, my sheep hill.
So the program had a few different benefits. One, as I mentioned, was to give returning soldiers jobs and potential income. Another, though, was kind of tied to this, not a utopia by any means. That's not the word I'm looking for, but this kind of like...
No, that was in Paraguay.
Yeah. This kind of
they
like...
left Australia to make that somewhere else.
Ideal vision of small-scale farming communities.
Okay.
That would provide social and economic stability. And so, like, granting these tracts of land to soldiers and these rural communities would... allow for population expansion to rural areas, and then that would prompt like infrastructure and stuff like that because they would have more people to serve. So it was to sort of like boost the country like as a whole and like under the guise of giving these soldiers tracts of land to farm.
All this will be yours one day. What the curtains? Keep going.
Oh. I even want watched that in so long.
What? The curtains?
All right.
So I just want to sing.
Stop it. Stop it. Okay. Go ahead.
This entire podcast is just quotes and songs. Why would anyone listen to this?
Okay. Go ahead, Liz.
We're done. We're done. We're done.
We're done now, I promise.
For now.
Suddenly, I don't question that one star we got. So by September 1920, they were starting to run out of good land to give the remaining soldiers. And so now you have soldiers that are receiving like crappy parcels of land. Okay. So basically like land that was not really productive, like it couldn't be farmed. And the land was given out like not very intuitively. It was just like divided up into blocks, and you might get a block of land that like didn't have access to water for farming or something like that. And so it was all like very, the resources were really unevenly distributed. And so like, you didn't know if you were going to get good land or bad land. And
they
so could all have the
traded
soldiers,
their rocks for some sheep and some wheat.
Also, a lot of the soldiers had no experience with farming, and they
Nor
were just like
Tracy,
going onto their land illegally.
It's true.
Then we also add in the late 1920s, there was the Great Depression, and that caused wheat prices to plummet. So now they're not even like getting as much money for all of the hard work that they're doing. And the government promised subsidies, but they never came.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's a little Rude. Bit of background on this like soldier settler scheme that the Australian government implemented after World War One. But so in all this land that they were giving away to their veterans had previous owners that were being displaced.
Oh, these weren't like free lands. These weren't government lands.
Oh, I guess I just assumed that no one was using it.
Well, yes, no one may have been using them. It belonged to the emus.
I'm sorry, the emus?
Yes. The lands that were being given away belonged to tens of thousands of emus.
Oh, the poor emus. They're just sad llamas.
Emus are birds.
Yeah, no, not.
Wait, what are the llama things?
Alpacas.
Alpacas?
No, it's like a... No. What are
you... Let me tell you right now about emus.
Wait, there's like a two syllable name for llama that isn't llama.
Alpaca.
That's not two syllable.
Two
llama
words.
Synonym. Other words. Other words. Llama
like creatures.
There's a two word synonym for emu, and it's an ostrich.
No,
that's a two.
Also, not a synonym.
The synonyms for llama include cattle, cow, elephant, hog, horse.
One of
pig.
These things is not like the other.
I think it's because there is no synonym for llama. You clearly don't even know what a llama or an emu are.
I really thought... Wait. Oh my god. How did I not know?
So emus...
I think you're
which I hope everybody else knows this.
Emu. I'm looking at a photo.
They're birds.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry.
What? I really thought I really thought they were what? Tell me about emus, Liz.
Okay. Emus. They are the second largest living bird by height, coming after its relative, the ostrich.
The ostrich?
Okay.
Oh. Emus are to llamas as ostrich are to alpacas.
Oh my god.
I have no idea if that is the accurate analogy.
Fucking shattered my world.
Oh, man.
So the emus are endemic to Australia. So they're like native to and are only found in Australia unless they're in like a captivity in a zoo. They weigh between 70 and 100 pounds and damn, they stand about 6 feet tall.
It's too big. Jeez. For a bird. That's yeah, too big.
While they can't fly, they can run 30 miles per hour.
Nope. No, thank you.
Mm-mm. Their diet consists of plants and insects, which they forage, but they can go for weeks without eating, which is very critical in these like harsh, rural, desolate Australian landscapes that they live in. They also drink infrequently, so they can survive drought to a certain extent.
Oh. Do they store it in their hump like a camel?
In their neck, like the alpacas.
There you go. Their brethren.
They breed in May and June, and the females court the males.
Ooh. Yeah, they do.
It's like Bumble.
Yeah.
It's Bird Bumble.
Oh my God.
The birds and the bees.
So the males are the ones that make the nest. They incubate the little baby eggs and they nurture good, the young.
Oh, like seahorses.
Yeah. And then they remain as a family unit until the next breeding season. So then they're like, peace out, everybody. So they don't like mate for life or anything like that.
But they stick around for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. They make sure that you come of age and whatnot.
They pay their child support.
Yeah.
I mean, do the babies leave the mother at that point too?
It seems so. Like they, yeah, so the they whole family as just a family goes their unit, own ways. Yeah. Emus were used as a source of food by indigenous Australians and early European settlers. And in addition to food, their fat was used for bush medicine. And it would also be mixed with pigment to make like traditional paint for like Aboriginal ceremonies.
I'm sorry. Okay. Bush medicine?
Yes.
Did they not teach you that?
Like Aboriginal medicine. Like
medicine for your bush.
That's just gynecology, you guys. There's a term for it.
So I think I read somewhere that like 95% of an emu can be used, which is like just a really efficient use of a resource. So they were really important to native peoples and European settlers because there was nothing you could waste with an emu. It's also an important cultural icon of Australia, appearing on their coat of arms and on several of their coins. The bird is also featured prominently in Indigenous Australian mythology. So I have a few examples that I enjoyed the most reading about. There is Aboriginal astronomy, which is just like astronomy that linked to mythology that is unique to Aboriginal people from Australia. Sure. And so some Aboriginal cultures view the emu as a creator spirit that used to fly over the land and like, you know, watch over and look over the land. And so the emu can be seen in the sky in the stars of the Milky Way. So this is something I've never really like gotten a great look at the Milky Way because I live in a city.
Sure.
But there's, you know, like constellations and like dusty streaks in the Milky Way that look like an emu in the sky. And this can be linked to a story that featured a cat and an emu that were married to each other.
Oh,
yeah. And one day while the cat was out hunting, a wombat came by for a visit. But the wombat had like hot, sexy feelings for the emu.
Sure.
And
wouldn't.
Yeah, the emu made the wombat leave before the cat got home because he was like, cat's really jealous and cat will like murder us both in an angry rage if
true
cat finds out that you're here. So wombat leaves, but cat comes home, finds out anyways. And
cats are no dummies.
Yeah, mm-mm. They make a fire or the cat throws the emu into the fire.
Oh,
rude.
Oh, yeah.
Don't piss off a cat. Mm-hmm, don't fuck with cats.
No.
And the emu jumped so high that it reached the sky and never returned. And so that's where the emu lives now in the Milky Way.
I don't like
that
the cat is like an abuser in this story.
Yeah. I mean, they're abusers in real life, but
mine are not. Mm. Mac is.
Yeah.
They did that cat wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Groups in New South Wales say that the sun was made by throwing an emu's egg into the sky.
Okay.
And then there's also, and this is my favorite, sort of like a creation myth of the emu. Like, where did emus come from?
Sexy times.
One story from Western Australia.
I'm just picturing, like, a kid being like, where did I come from? But it's like, where did emus come from? Well, when a mommy and a daddy emu love each other for just a year.
One story from Western Australia tells that a man once annoyed a small bird. So this, like, human man was, like, picking on a small little bird.
That man needs a hobby.
Yeah. The small little bird responded by throwing a boomerang.
Sure.
As you
and
do.
The boomerang cut off the arms of the man.
That's so wow. Australia. Throw a boomerang at it.
This transformed him into a flightless emu.
Wait, so we are from
no
emus?
Notes. No notes.
Emus are from man.
An oh. emu is the de-evolution of an asshole man who got his arms amputated by a boomerang thrown by a small bird. What about this is not clear, Tracy?
You're right. You're right.
No notes.
There's also another myth about why emus can't fly, like why they're flightless. And so there's a lot of mythology that tells that, you know, the emus used to be able to fly and they were the most majestic of all the birds. And so they were essentially the king of the animal kingdom in Australia because they were the largest, the fastest, the most powerful and all that. And so emus were like the gods of animals in Australia. But there was a turkey family that was very jealous of the emus. They were the Goombal Gubbins.
The what?
I'm sorry.
Goombal
Did
Gubbin.
You sneeze?
It sounds like some kind of a creature from a kid's show. Like a Teletubby.
Yes.
The Goombal Gubbin.
Mm-hmm. Like the Wiggles.
Sounds like a Mario bad guy. Goomba.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
The mushroom guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Wario.
No, not Wario.
He's just throwing
Wario's
out.
Wario's just a
That was the only one I could think of. Yeah. Mushroom. No,
it's the little mushroom thing.
In Mario. Yeah.
Just look up Goomba. Goomba.
Oh, yeah. Goombas.
It's the mushroom thing. You just can't
I didn't
it.
Know that was the term.
He's the one that's in the cloud that throws... Oh, no, I'm thinking of something else.
I didn't know that was the term.
Or you're thinking of the little guy that sits on the cloud and throws the axes. Yeah. I forget what he's called. No. Yeah. Goomba is the mushroom one.
Yeah.
He's the guy that just literally just walks back and forth, and if you touch it, you die.
I don't remember this angry version of him, but I do remember the other one.
Well, Goombal Gubbin wanted to show the emus who's boss and, like, prove that turkeys are the superior birds in Australia. And... Goombal Gubbin tricked an emu into cutting off its own wings.
Rude.
Because Goombal Gubbin, like, tucked his wings in and pretended he didn't have any and was like, oh, like, this is the new thing. All the other birds are going to be talking about it. And, like, you should get on board. And so the emus cut off its own wings. And the turkey was like, just kidding. Now you can't fly anymore. And so the emu, who is named Dinawan, or I have absolutely no idea how to pronounce that one. But so the emu retaliated in a very crazy way. The emu went out, like, hunting with two of its kids. And Goombal Gubbin was like, hey, where's, like, the rest of your family? Like, you have a bunch of kids. And the emu was like, oh, it's easier to, like, hunt and feed your family when it's so small. Like, two kids are the new thing.
Oh.
And so the turkey was like, oh, shit. So the turkey killed all except for two of its kids.
Oh, my God.
Thinking that, like...
come on. No one thinks that's a good idea.
Wow, the emu's right. It is more economical to only have two kids. And that the emu was like, just kidding, Goombal Gubbin. I just left all my other kids at home.
Boom, bitch.
So Dinah is the, like, the story behind why emus can't fly and why turkeys only lay like 2 eggs per clutch.
Why are birds so susceptible to peer pressure?
Yeah. Be your own person, birds.
Jeez.
It's a bird eat bird world.
Bird wars.
Hashtag bird wars.
So that's just all some interesting background about how important emus are to Australia culturally, mythologically, etc. So by this point in time, when we're doing the soldier settlement thing in Australia in the 1920s, the emus had been a protective native species, which I think I pretty well illustrated why they were so important to the native people. But this was all back when, you know, we weren't trying to farm the land that they lived on. And so we just stayed out of each other's way and everybody lived happy lives independently. But now that we have all of these soldiers farming their land, they're like butting heads with each other. And the emus suddenly become pests because they're destroying the wheat fields and they're getting into the farmer's way because they're being displaced and pushed out. And so they're like retaliating by like coming back and like tramping through your farms and stuff. Like they don't actually have anywhere else to go. So they're hanging around and they're being a quote nuisance.
Okay.
Which is like not the case. They're not pests. Like you're the one, you're the pests. You're invading their territory.
Right.
And just expecting them to understand like the new way of the world.
Right.
But it became more important to protect the wheat instead of the emus because the emus did not have as much economical value. So they were officially.
There's no emu resource card, you know?
Yeah.
No.
Can't trade them for anything.
Yeah. I'll trade you one emu for one ore. No, get the fuck out of here.
What am I going to do with this emu?
So the emus were officially reclassified as vermin.
Aww.
And the government put bounties on their beaks.
That hurts their feeling.
Oh.
This initially did not make any significant changes. It is, in fact, suggested that the bounty could have been like an empty gesture or just like propaganda to show that the government was like listening to the soldiers and, you know, hearing their concerns and, you know, offering a solution. But it basically puts it out of their own hands. It's like, we're just like, it's up to somebody else to take care of the emu problem and we'll just like pay you out for it. Mm-hmm. So it's not like really stepping up and doing anything to help the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And the veterans only had rifles, which didn't really do much against a 100-pound, 6-foot bird. They're actually pretty tough. So they needed machine guns. And like a coalition of farmers called on the Australian military to take action against the birds because it was becoming like a really significant economical burden on the farming community.
Sure.
Question.
Yes.
Like, could they not have built like a fence big enough to keep them out? They don't fly.
No, I think that it would have been a really big project to. I mean, we're talking about how many tracts of land. It's like building the border wall. Like, it's a lot of fencing that would be required for like 5,000 small farms.
I guess, but if each individual farmer built a fence around their own farm, I know it's a lot of money, but like, we're talking about war on the emus right now, like, which
I feel like the emus are gonna win this,
which makes more sense, I guess.
Well, it also depends on what, you know, they weren't all farming wheat. Like, some of them had cattle, pigs, etc. So things that needed to move around and graze or to be able to cross paths of land to access like water or other resources. And stuff like that. And I did read like that they had some farmers used fencing like to keep rabbits out, but then the emus would come and they would destroy that fencing. And then so all the rabbits would get in. So now they have an emu and a rabbit problem.
Great.
I mentioned earlier, tens of thousands of emus are how many were displaced, but there's one region in Australia in particular that had a problem with an estimated like 20,000 emus. So that's kind of like the size of the population that we're looking at that was causing like the largest issues to the farming community.
Okay.
So the military, the government decides to send in the Australian military. And by the Australian military, I mean three people.
Great.
On November 2nd, 1932, the Australian army, consisting of one commander and two soldiers, set out to take care of the emu problem. Because they were just like, they're fucking emus. Somebody go out there with a machine gun and come back in a couple days and tell me that it's done.
I don't like this. I don't like where this is going.
So this little army of three plus one journalist that they brought along.
Just to document it.
Yeah, to document this amazing.
Who was a journalist with all the big wars, you know?
Yeah. They found a group of 50 emus. And okay. They moved in formation behind the emus.
Come on, emus. Now let's get in formation.
And the emus, quote, answered their organized assault with inspired chaos.
Amazing.
Scattering themselves in all directions to minimize the casualties.
That's just smart.
Yeah.
That's just good.
I mean, war that just tactics. Sounds like they just fleed and just didn't have a plan, so they all went in different directions.
Well, it was a good tactic.
It was a good plan.
It doesn't sound like a plan. It just sounds like they're like, oh shit, people are here, and they just ran for it and they all happened to run in different directions. Don't think there was a strategy here.
You are really minimizing the emu's credit, and I do not appreciate it. Now that I know about emus, yeah, so I am dedicated.
What emu is.
I am dedicated to their.
Isn't your new favorite animal?
Yep. I'm getting an emu tattoo.
Well, they are known to travel and hunt or scavenge in packs. That is a strategy of like pack animals like that to minimize casualties. Like some animals might stay in their pack because there's strength in numbers and they can like, you know, with that mass that they have, defeat a predator. Whereas others use the fleeing dispersal method where like they can't get us all and they probably don't really have any natural predators, so that was their instinct and it worked.
All right. So they didn't get a single emu.
So they managed to get a few. There's no exact number here, but the casualties were very low. They did not get nearly as many as they anticipated when they were sneaking up on 50 giant birds the size of people. So they had to regroup, come up with another strategy. They decide on an ambush approach, which I feel like the first approach was also kind of an ambush approach, but they instead decided to pick a location and wait for the birds to come to them instead of like finding a group and attacking them. So they picked a water supply area and waited for the emus to show. After 2 days, concealed gunners spotted 1,000 emus.
Damn.
Yeah. So, like, they really travel in packs. And so they opened fire on 1,000 emus. They only got 10 of them before the machine gun jammed.
Wait, they had one machine gun?
Well, they only had a three-person army. And I think that's just
three
how many
on a thousand is not good odds.
Need. No. Well, I think they thought, we have a machine gun. How much more do we need? It's not like they're firing back at us.
I know, but they start running. You can't hit 1,000 and that, I don't know.
I don't think they realized what would happen when they shot.
But they would run?
Yeah. So after only 10 emus, the machine gun jammed. And by the time they were able to fix the machine gun, all the birds were gone. And they waited for them to return, but the emus aren't fucking idiots, and they didn't come back.
Yeah, obviously. Think things through, people.
And the media had a field day with this. One was quoted as saying, "The emus have proved that they are not so stupid as they are usually considered to be. Each mob has its leader. always
Kimuma boss.
Amazing.
Always an enormous black plumed bird standing fully 6 feet high who keeps watch while his fellows busy themselves with the wheat.
Whitey emu.
At the first suspicious sign, he gives the signal and dozens of heads stretch up out of the crop. A few birds will take fright, starting a headlong stampede for the scrub, the leader always remaining until his followers have reached safety. So they're describing...
Goes down with a ship, man.
Yeah, they're describing, you know, these herds of emus as like an organized tactical...
This is an artillery, like...
regimen, yeah.
Amazing.
I just found a picture of an emu with a war hat on.
I feel like emus are better at war than I would be, like...
So, once again, the army needs another new tactic. Since the birds were too fast for them to fire on, they decided to mount a machine gun to a farmer's truck. So again, this is how unprepared they were. They did not appear to bring any of their like government issued military vehicles.
Sure.
They just sent like three people out with a machine gun thinking that that's all
they just need. Really underestimated the emus is what happened.
So they found a farmer and they were like, can we load this machine gun onto your truck and drive it around shooting at emus? It turned out that the machine gun was too heavy, and so the truck couldn't maintain enough speed to keep up with the emus because it was weighed down by the gun.
Okay.
And also, the ride in the truck was so bumpy that it was almost impossible to maneuver and aim the machine gun. So they're just like chasing these birds around on the back of a really slow truck and just like aiming at nothing, hoping for the best.
Great.
It's a great military strategy.
There's no notes on how many or even if any emus they got on this particular endeavor, but it was considered to be a failure.
Womp womp.
They made another attempt on November 8th. So this is all like within a week after the initial ambush. They took 25% of the ammunition that they were allotted. So I don't know exactly how much this was, but this army that was sent to take care of the emu problem was given like a certain allotment of ammunition to use in this emu calling event. And so this one day they were like, okay, we have to like go big and go hard. So they took 25% of all of the ammunition that they were given. And they were like, we're just going to go like balls to the wall and go after these emus. And so they took down 200 emus, which is only, in grand total, 1% of all the emus that they were after.
It just sounds like we are generally outsmarted by these emus.
Yeah. So they used 25% of all of the ammunition they were given to call 1% of the problem.
Oh,
this is not looking good for humanity.
I just feel like the fences might be a better investment. I'm sorry.
I'm starting to come to team fence on this.
Yeah. Build that wall.
If Trump had suggested an emu wall, we would have been all over it.
Mm-hmm. When asked by a journalist if a medal was to be struck for those taking part in this war, the army said it should rightly go to the emus who have won every round so far.
The emus are crushing
point
it, man.
Emu.
10 points to the emus.
I think the emus are Ravenclaws.
The emus, yeah, they have to be because they have claws.
And they're pretty smart. And they're birds.
And they're birds. That was where I was going. But yeah.
After about a month, it was reported that the army was able to take about 100 emus per week. But still, this was not a very efficient endeavor because it took 10 bullets for every one emu. And that was just like not determined to be worth it.
They're using 1,000 bullets a week.
Yeah.
So 10 emus per week, right? 10?
Yeah. No, sorry, 100 per week.
100 per week.
10 100 bullets.
100 per week, 10 bullets so that's per emu.
5,200 emu per year in a population of tens of thousands.
This is all happening. I mean, you're talking on a scale of time that they're not even considering. It's been a month.
I know. I'm just considering, like, if they were to continue, like, how long would it take to decimate the population? It's going to take many years.
They will reproduce faster.
Like, right, well, yeah. Well, I don't know if they make 5,000. I guess 5,000 babies get born each year, right? So, with a population of tens of thousands. So, it's, yeah. It's you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah. So, they realized this after about a month that they were making essentially no progress in the grand scheme of things. And, like, they were not getting a return on their investment of, like, ammunition.
Sure.
So they were also being destroyed in the media, and the government was very embarrassed by the whole situation.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like you should be. Mm-hmm.
So they called their army back and closed the mission. Quote, "The Emu Command had evidently ordered guerrilla tactics. And its unwieldy army soon split up into innumerable small units that made use of the military equipment uneconomic. A crestfallen field force therefore withdrew from the combat area after about a month. The Great Emu War had ended and the emus had won with the military surrender." So the Emu War ends. And the veterans were still like, wait, no, you didn't fix the problem. The veterans of World War.
No, the original veterans. Not the veterans of the Emu War.
I was thinking the veterans of the Emu War.
No, the original ones.
All three people veterans.
Purple Emu Heart.
Well, also the Emu veterans. Let's not discount them. Mm-hmm. They fought pretty damn hard, too.
Well, now there are three more veterans we have to worry about.
Emus with their purple hearts. One of the pictures I sent you guys is an emu with like a war style hat on and like a cigarette hanging out of its mouth, and it's a black and white photo.
Amazing.
That should be your episode photo, Liz.
That should just be your profile photo at work.
That emu's seen some shit.
That emu knows how to get shit done.
Mm-hmm. So in response, the government just kind of resorted back to what they had done initially, was just like make it the veterans' like problem to deal with by giving them ammo. So they were just like, we'll give you
here is the ammo. Emu land. Good luck with the emu.
And DIY like, emu
you
war.
Take care of it. But like, we're pulling our people out. Like, we are no longer
our three
engaged.
People.
Yeah, our three people.
I mean, they weren't exactly, you know,
pulling
funding.
Our people out. Yeah, come on, I mean, get the fuck out of here. Pulling
so
our people
the farmers
out.
Continued to hunt the emus for decades. It's unclear like how significant of an impact they made.
I'm gonna guess not very.
But yeah, not very, because as we determined, even with a machine gun, they were very unsuccessful when they had like the professionals handling it. Mm-hmm. And
professional is not the term I would use for this, but go ahead.
And they would like run through the ammo and still have a bunch of emu problems. And so they asked the
hashtag emu problems.
I got 99 problems and emo is 99.
Are 94 of them.
They continue to ask the military for support, and they specifically requested like machine guns. Like, they were just giving them ammo for their rifles. Okay. And they were like, can you give us something bigger? And so they asked in 1934, 1943, and 1948, and they were always denied because the military knew that it didn't matter.
We tried that.
The emu are too smart. Work.
The settlement scheme also ultimately turned into a failure, not just because of the emu problem, but also because a lot of soldiers just lacked capital. Like, they didn't have the resources to really put into maintaining their farms. Settlers were not suited for farming. Like, they weren't trained. They were not skilled in these areas.
Well, yeah, just like, what is that? Like, you went to war, you know how to fight in a war. Like, how does that translate to, I want to be a farmer? Like, yeah. That's not necessarily a given transition, you know?
Yeah, no. A lot of them saw it as an opportunity. Like, this it's an opportunity to own land that you might not otherwise have had. But so many of them just walked away from it. And they're like, you know what? I'll go back to the city.
Fuck it.
They can't sell it. They're kind of like, they have to work it for 5 years before they become the owners of it.
Oh, okay.
They still have to, like, it's like loaned to them, essentially, as like an opportunity that they have to invest in and stuff like that. So a lot of them just walked away from it and were like, whatever, I'm going to go back to the city and like I'll bartend or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So a lot of farmers abandoned it early on anyways. So it was considered a failure on all accounts.
Yeah. Sounds like overall, like yeah. humans, zero, emus, several points.
Yeah. And since then, the emus have been reinstated with protected status. The emu population around Australia is estimated to be about 600,000. And they are nationally classified as of least concern, meaning like they're so populous.
I literally almost pointed that out because I clicked on like the kids version of like, what is an emu? And it said least concerned under endangered, like endangerment status.
Plentiful.
Yeah.
Not concerned.
Yeah. They are not at any risk.
Nope. They're fine.
There are actually like there's small pockets of populations in like isolated areas that have become extinct or are in jeopardy of becoming extinct. But on like mainland Australia, like they have emus for days. They're fine.
Okay.
Emus are good.
Emus for days.
Yeah.
And you get an emu and you get an emu.
But there's so many of them. Emus, are they not your speed?
No. I will turn this podcast around.
But there's so many of them.
There's so many emus. You know, the emus really surpassed all expectations. They are the antithesis of Lee.
That is true. Yeah, it's the Australian army.
They really
army. Instead of army of one, it's army of three.
Yeah. I think army is a little generous term for what was happening here.
Well, that is the story of the Emu War.
Oh, boy.
1932.
I mean, again, just like with the monarch segment that you did, I feel like it's too grandiose a term for what was happening here. Like, we need a different term for like
lives were lost, guns were fired. It was a war.
I mean, if you want to hear more about these non-starters, but as they relate to Hamilton lyrics, you can listen to Harpy Hour on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen, please rate us and leave a positively radiant review.
Do it.
Yes.
And if you have stories you think we might like, or you just want to say hello because we're so fun and awesome, you can email us at harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Harpy Hour Pod.
We are also on Patreon, so all that extra money you have lying around and you don't know what to do with it.
That you're not spending on an emu war?
Yeah.
All the money you're saving from not shooting emus, please donate.
Yes, exactly. Donate to us. Help keep us on the air. We'll give you extra content, give you even more entertainment.
Sure will.
Mm-hmm. So thanks for listening.
Okay, bye.